Children, we'll see you later today for play rehearsal. Don, I agree with you. That's a great one, that hymn. I'm with you. Ellen and I had that sung in our wedding. And to be honest with you, my favorite moment when we got married, but the vows were beautiful, but was when I was singing with my wife, singing that song, realizing my God is with me. He's in this marriage. I want him. And I remember that was my favorite moment in our wedding, and I was brought back to that today. Thank you. Well, we're in a series called No Such Thing as a Tearless Mission. I was reminded of a story by author Mike Iaconelli. He tells a story of this high school kid who had a dream. He had a dream. He had a family that grew up on a horse ranch. His father was a horse trainer. They didn't own the property, but it was there that the impetus of his dream was. Now, they were on the road often when you're a horse trainer because of the horse season. And so while on the road, he had to go to a lot of different schools growing up. Well, his senior year in high school, he was asked by the teacher to give a paper. And the paper was to be about on your dream. What is your dream? And so he gave great consideration to this dream. And his dream was this: to own a 200-acre horse ranch with stables and tracks and a 4,000-foot home. But this kid actually drew a diagram of the property and the design of the house. Talk about details, right, to a dream. He turned the paper in, and 2 days later, he got back the paper with a grade and a comment. The grade was an F, and the comment was, "Come and see me." So the boy went to go see the teacher, and the teacher said, "It's too unrealistic. Here's the paper. Do it over. Make it more realistic, and I'll consider to change your grade." Boy goes home, talks to his dad. They process it together, but the father said this: "It's your decision." He took the weekend and thought it over, and this is what he did. He went to class, and after class, he talked to the teacher and said, "Here, keep the grade. I'm keeping the dream." Isn't that good? It's a true story. When we face challenges to the dreams that we believe that are in our heart that God has given us, we will face dream slayers. We will face people that will not see what we see. They will not like what we like. But are we willing to pay the price to get there? Sometimes it's a grade. Sometimes it's your money. Sometimes it's your heart. But if it's worth it, it's found in Christ. And it's always, always worth it. If it's with him and in him, always. And so we're in a series. Jesus, remember, he had a mission. What was that mission? Remember, he said, "I came to seek and to save the lost." And you look at his life, he did that. He was seeking and he was saving people. But along the way, he faced obstacles to that dream, right? To that mission. We looked at three that he faced last week. I mean, there were multiple that he faced, but he faced a death threat, right? We looked at that. We looked at the rejection of the people that were supposed to welcome him, right? That red carpet the Pharisees were supposed to lay out, but they set up trap doors, right? Talk about a contrast. And then, of course, the big one for me as I looked at his life is the jilted longings. "Oh, I long to gather you together," Jesus said. "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how I've longed to gather you together as a hen gathers her chicks." It's powerful because that's a lament. That's a moment in which he's feeling the great loss. But he presses forward. And he does this out of great love. So how do you continue on? One of the passages I want to read before the main passage is Isaiah 46:10. God is speaking through Isaiah, and it says this: "I make known the end from the beginning, from ancient times, what is still to come. I say, my purpose will stand, and I will do all that I please." Woo! Talk about assurance. Two key words there, remember. Two key words. Yasser in Hebrew and Yasser. What are those? Yasser is this: when you conjure up something in your mind, you imagine, right? You walked into your house with the real estate agent and you imagined your life there, right? Then you do the Yasser part, which is what? You create it. And then your spouse looks at the numbers and goes, "That much money? To do all that?" That is those two words that God has in his dream nature. Yasher, Yasar. Conjure, create. Remember that. That's in you too. That DNA strand of the Spirit is in you. Dutch Sheets says this. He helped me understand this. He said this. You have a dreaming nature. You inherit this from your Creator. His dreaming heart could find millions of expressions, and you were designed to dream. A life without dreams is like a GPS without a satellite. Without God-given dreams to guide you, you will travel life's highway searching for a destination you'll never find. How many of us are here today? We've seen so many broken dreams of family and friends, and it's hard to watch that. We've got to get connected to God's dream. It's so important. And so I want to look at a biblical story of a man who had his own dream. He wanted to be a father. Who doesn't when you get married? I mean, not everybody, but I'm just generally speaking. This man's dream wasn't just for himself. He wanted to have offspring and grandchildren. And so he had this dream, but God comes into his life and out of that says, I have a dream too. And somehow I'm going to show you how to bring them together. Abraham had a dream to be a father, but God raises the bar and brings it to another plane and says, yeah, but I want you to be a father of many nations. Powerful. So how does he get him to get there? It took 25 years to get him there. He wasn't ready for it. He said, here's what I have for you to make you a great nation, right? But here he could be. He was in the living room going, there's no playpen here. And I'm going to be a father of many nations. There's no cooing. There's no burping. There's no diaper changing. There's no kids in the yard. There's no stockings on the fireplace. And I'm going to be a father of many nations. Are you kidding me? But he had faith, right? He did have faith. He did see it. And so I want to look at this together. Because before I read this passage, I just want to read one prayer of his that captures that moment. I said it, but he prayed this before we get to his life. He said, oh, sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless and the one who will inherit my estate is Eleazar of Damascus, and you have given me no children, so a servant in my household will be my heir. You can hear his struggle. You can hear his heartache. And what I want to do with you, what I want to bring you through is sort of scenes of Abraham's life in this dream that he had, and God's dream. I kind of want to walk you through those scenes, all right? So that out of that, we can start to look at what is my purpose? Why am I here? What is that dream and that mission with you, God? And so we'll walk through Abraham's life with that. Because I know you have personal dreams. Dreams for your children and grandchildren, for them to find their calling, right? To find joy in this life. We dream that. You dream of new vocation. Maybe you're at a crossroads and you're like, it's time for a change, right? Dreams of adventure with your spouse to actually travel to Alaska or Acadia, Maine. It's a dream. You conjure it, you create it. Dreams of finding first love again, or maybe finding love in your marriage again. Dreams of making friends that last. Friends that speak your soul language. When they talk, it's like your heart goes there with them. Dreams of finding a spiritual mother, a spiritual father, a brother to guide you. Dreams of financial freedom. Dreams of a vibrant church. Dreams of a deeper, more meaningful relationship with God. Dreams of a new pastor. We all have them. All right, let's look at the passage I want you to see, Genesis 22, verses 1 to 5. We're going to read the main passage I'm going to look at, but we're going to, you know, the scenes, we're going to build up to it. But let's read a passage here, and then we'll go back in time. But so I'm going to go to the end, if you will, then we'll go to the beginning. But here's kind of the end of one key scene. Abraham was tested. Genesis 22, verse 1 to 5. Sometime later, God tested Abraham. He said to him, Abraham, here I am, he replied. Then God said, take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on a mountain I will show you. Early the next morning, Abraham got up and loaded his donkey. He took with him two of his servants and his son Isaac. When he had enough cut wood for the burnt offering, he set out to the place God had told him about. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. He said to his servants, "Stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship and then we will come back to you." Abraham took the wood from the burnt offering and placed it on the son Isaac, and he himself carried the fire and the knife. The two of them went up together. Isaac spoke up and said to his father, "Abraham, father." "Yes, my son," Abraham replied. "The fire and the wood are here," Isaac said, "but there is a lamb for the burnt offering." "Where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" Abraham answered, "God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son." And the two of them went together. That's where we're going. Let's go back in time. How did this all start? Scene number one. Abraham is growing up in a country with his family, and God says to him, "It's time to go. It's time to go." He says, "Leave your," this is what he says in Genesis 12, "go from your country, leave your people, your father's household, and the land I will show you." Whenever God prepares us for something, he's got to take us from the things that held us back or the things that maybe would not prepare us well for the dream that's coming. And so in this instance, he's asking him to let go, move forward, let go. There's preparation underway. Abraham doesn't always understand that, but I like the fact that he's willing to go without all the details. "Go to the land I will show you." That is a hard step to take. In other words, get going, and then while you're going, I'll show you. We want the details before we go. That's not always how God works. So Abraham is called by faith, right? He's called by faith. Gallup poll says that when it comes to moving, on the scale of stress, it's number four. It's interesting. It's number four. So Elle and I have had our share of moving, and it can be stressful. I remember one moving time, we were moving to Colorado to be at the National Office of the Christian Missionary Alliance, and these people, the movers, put all our stuff in the yard, right? It was all out there, and then the rains came. And I looked at him, I said, "What are you going to do?" He goes, "You got any tarps?" No. Nice plan there, buddy. Stress level, right? Moves will do that. They create stress. But here was the hard thing. "I will make you into a great nation. I'm leaving my own people. How is this going to work out, God?" One of the hardest experiences of life is to leave the means by which you think your dreams will come true. And then you're looking at other people whose dreams are coming true and yours is not. Everybody else is having kids, God, but we have none. That is a hard place to be. No cooing, no birthing, but remember, yasser and yasar. Imagine and create. God's doing something. Scene two, you come now, scene two, Genesis 15, verse 1. "After this, the word of the Lord came to Abraham in a vision. Do not be afraid, Abraham. I am your shield, your very great reward." But Abraham said, "Sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless, and the one who will still inherit my estate is Eleazar of Damascus? You've given me no children." Along the path that God gives us in the preparation of our dream and his dream, as he tries to show us things in this intersection, is that he is the reward. Sometimes the dream takes on too much of a magnitude, right? In other words, "Abraham, I am your great reward. Remember that." I think God delayed in bringing the dream come true for Sarah and Abraham, because he had to show them, "I am your reward." Whenever our dreams become bigger than the dream maker, he's got to change things underway. He's got to make those changes so that we get back to him as, "You're our great reward." Yes, he is. And Abraham had to learn this in the delay of his dream, in the detours of his dream. And so we see this so often. We've seen that, Ellen and I, over the years with couples where God doesn't always direct in a sequential time. It's kind of like a zigzag. And we've seen that with couples, and we've talked with them. And I remember conversations with different people over the years in my car, in the house, at the parsonage, or wherever. And I always have to ask the question, is your dream of God still the most important thing to you than the dream that's not being answered right now? I am your great reward, Abraham. Keep that in mind. So we move to scene 3. We know from Genesis 16 that Sarah comes to Abraham with this idea. The Lord has kept me from having children, she said. Go, sleep with my slave. Perhaps I can build a family through her. Abraham agreed. What's missing in that conversation? God, right? Like, let's stop, honey, and let's really consult the Lord on this. Nothing. When 12 to 13 years we think pass by and God's not doing what we thought he said he would do, we've got ideas. And when we start to do that, we move into the natural way of doing things rather than the supernatural way. We serve a supernatural God. And when we see that God does it in a supernatural way, we go, wow, you're God. This is amazing. This is where he wants to take us. He wants us to elevate our view of him. And it takes that. But these two did not consult him. And we turned to natural ways. One of the things, the challenges we face as pastors, and we've got to be careful to do this and make sure the future pastor doesn't do this with you guys. If he does, call me down and I'll, all right, he and I will have a meeting. Sorry. Whatever. But here's what I wanted to say to you is Henry Blackerby, a pastor to pastor, said this: our job is to ask God for his dream. We never find God in scriptures asking people to dream up what they want to do for him. So when that pastor comes, he's to talk with you, talk with the elders, talk with the leaders, talk with the people, consult the Lord, and then together go, here is our mission, here's our dream. That is what needs to happen. Abraham and Sarah did not do this. And so God delays, there's deaths that have to happen, and so forth. So God's purpose then is, Abraham, I want you to wait. That was his purpose. Because in the waiting, things are revealed inside us, like anxiousness and striving. And, well, we see this with Abraham and Sarah. What do you do in the waiting then? Cling to his promises. You got to hold on to those promises. I think we were praying as elders before, and I just felt like I had to say to one of us, and I'm saying for myself, sometimes some people take the long way home. They're not coming back to Christ right now, but they're probably going to have to take the long way home. It's a Supertramp song. Sorry, it just popped in my head. Remember that one? It's crazy what goes through this head when I'm preaching up here. Cling to his promises. And we know that in all things, God works together for the good to those that love him and are called according to his purpose. Be honest before God in your struggle. Be honest. Abraham's honest here. I can't see it, God. I can't see. Be honest before him. Then remind yourself, he's the dream maker is always better than the dream. You cannot dream up something better for your life than what you already have in Christ that's greater. You can never outgive God. Right? Scene 4, Abraham and Isaac. Okay, we just read that passage, right? Isaac's name means one who laughs, one who rejoices. You know what I think? I think that wasn't just a name in the nursery word. I think that was the culture of their home eventually. I bet you they laughed a lot. Don't you love to be around families that laugh? I do. I go to Ellen, I go, we're going back here. These people are fun. They had a culture in their home. And that's what happens. Oh, when that happens and then God calls us to sacrifice that, talk about a test of our dream and the dream maker's dream to take us to another level, to his dream. Very difficult to do that. I remember when we were teaching people at the University of Kiev in Ukraine, and it was a dream come true for me, because here we were in Ukraine, a country that we had prayed for, the Iron Curtain to fall, and all these things we were praying for God for revival. And so we were in the University of Kiev teaching English as a second language, but inviting them to come to class after school where we would teach them English, but also talk about the spiritual life, right? So the administration agreed with us that we would do this together. And I remember just being there in this country. It was amazing. I remember being on a train, this elderly man was just staring at me. And I remember I just asked our translator, can you talk with me? I said, excuse me, sir, you keep looking at me, and that's okay, but what is your name? No shocker here, Nicholas. I said, what do you do? And he interrupted, he said, I never thought I would see an American in my country before. And now here you are. Well, I told him why we were there and so forth. So as we're at the university teaching, the administration said to me as they were listening to me, you're holding back from sharing Christ. Don't be, it's okay. So what I did with the students, what we did as a team, we asked them two questions in our class. What is your dream and how do you suppose to get there? Here were the two. We want to fall in love and get married and have children. That was their primary. And then we talked about God's dream for you. So over those 2 weeks, we got close. It was a great time. It was very hard for me when the war started because I was thinking about those students who are now in families. And I remember being on the train. We were going to Odessa, and it was a long train ride, so we played games, we were having food, and it was after 2 weeks of class together, it was just a wondrous time. And I remember Katrina. I was just drawn to her. And I remember just sitting in my seat just at the end of some games and things, and the Lord said very clear to me, tell her about me. Whew. It's okay, Lord. And we got talking, her friends were there, we were talking, and she said to me, it never crossed my mind that God would love me like that, if that's what Jesus is about. She never had that in her mind before. See, we dream on one plane, God dreams on a higher plane. Abraham wanted to be a father, but God wanted to father her. So it was a stunning move for me as I see God's dream come through in our lives. God has longings. He has a mission. He wants to be known. Scene 5, here we arrive at Genesis 22. Take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains I will tell you about. Stunning words. Stunning words. There's a lot here. I could have stopped. This could have been our main passage today, but I wanted to walk up to it, right? So here we are. So first of all, notice that God only acknowledges Isaac. See, what we make without God, God doesn't notice. What's really important is what he does, right? Jesus said, I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. Unless the Lord builds a house, what we labor in vain. So the things that we don't do with God, he doesn't even acknowledge. Wow, that's sobering. Abraham did not have explicit directions from God. God said to him, in the region of Moriah, on one of those mountains I will tell you about. Sometimes we follow God and we want more details, and he says, trust me, obey. Moriah was a 3-day journey, about 50 to 55 miles. Can you imagine what that was like to think about the sacrifice? But it says Abraham left the next day after he heard these words. Plans, right? Plans that we have. I think I heard this. Someone said this. If you want to make God laugh, tell God your plans. I've had a lot of those. I thought the Lord was in it. I remember when Ellen and I started SoulQuest. And we felt like we needed to start a ministry school for the Alliance. I saw what was coming. And we're going to start this ministry school. And leadership said, no. Then Naya College closed and ATS closed. And I went, there it is. It was coming. I said to my wife, after working hard on this, I said, honey, why should I not do this anymore? She says, you're too angry. God can't use that. So that had to die. Boom. But Abraham was different. He was different. Why? How was he able to move forward, right? This was the death of his dream. How could he go forward? How did he do it? It says here in Hebrews 11:17-19, by faith Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had received the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. Abraham reasoned that God would raise the dead. And figuratively speaking, he did receive Isaac back from the dead. Notice the word reasoning. What did he reason? He reasoned what God said, not what he thinks. He reasoned what God said, and that's what we need in times of our dreams when we're shaken. Okay, God, what did you say? Help me to interpret accurately what you say, and I can follow. And so he concluded, better to follow the dream maker than my own dream, because I know that you have a dream through my son to bring the Messiah. There's something about my line. So what about you, your life? When you envision your life and your family, think about where you are, where God has taken you. Where do you want to go next? What's that next chapter? What's that next step? What's that next dream that you have? Whatever it is, think through it. Submit it to God and find out, is there too much materialism in this, God? Is there too much consumerism in this? Is there too much individuality in this? Is there too much naturalism in this? Rather than your promises, God, ask him those questions. And guess what? He'll forgive you. He'll forgive you and get you back on track. So when I think about you and God's new work, this is all preparation, right? This interim when I'm with you. Think about it. Abraham had 25 years of preparation. You just get one. At least this year, right? Karen, you're left. There's preparation that we need to understand. There's a purpose in the pain and the struggle and the stretching. It's never in vain. It can be if we don't connect it to the Father. Look at Joseph's life, Psalm 105, as the author is looking back at Joseph's life. He sent a man before them, Joseph, who was sold as a slave. They bruised his feet in fetters. His neck they put in iron collar. Until his prediction came to pass, the word of the Lord tested him. So often we're tested. Let me wrap this up and we'll bring it together and close. There's two kinds of friendships that people have with God. Two kinds. There's the casual friend, and then there's the intimate friend. The casual friend is a friend of God where the friendship exists. They do care, but their strings attach. It has conditions, right? The characteristics of a casual friend is we pursue him when we can. We develop a relationship when it's convenient. We value safety over risk. We value comfort over being stretched to grow. We value naturalism over supernaturalism. And therefore, we keep it casual. But God is much more personal. He wants a closer relationship with you. He wants to be the great reward. And so people settle for casual friendship. What dream do you have that maybe is getting in the way that you just need to lay at the altar and say, God, I've made this more important than you? I think of David Thompson. He's a CMA missionary who was a doctor. Tremendous man. His parents were missionaries to Cambodia, and they literally gave their lives. They were martyred in the 1950s as Alliance missionaries. I met David several times over the years. One of those times was at Life 2004. Life, remember, conferences where 5,000, 6,000 youth come together. I was heading up the prayer team, and I went into the room to pray with David before he spoke to the students. And I remember walking in and going, whoa, God's presence is in this room. God has prepared this man to speak. You see, as I began to study and talk with David about his life, he entered in a mournful season when his parents had died in Cambodia. But then God had called him years later to go back to Cambodia to preach to the people that had killed his parents. How do you do that? If you carry the dream of God, which was the Cambodian people to come to Christ, that's in you, nothing will stop you. And he saw people come to Christ. And that's when he knew that his parents' sacrifice was worth it. God used it. But how do you get to that intimate friendship I just kind of described? I think there are altars that we have to lay down with God. And I'm going to show you in Abraham's life in a moment here. One of the things I'm learning, and I think you would understand this, is I believe this. If we succeed in life, it's because someone before us has sacrificed. And if we sacrifice, it's because we're preparing the way for the people behind us to succeed. This is what someone said, and I agree with it. Let me say it again. If we're called to sacrifice, it's for those behind us so they might succeed. If we're succeeding, it's only because of those that sacrificed before us. That's how the kingdom works. And so God is looking for people like that. And Abraham was called to that. Here is the amazing thing when you study Abraham's life, and I'll bring this together now. The first mountain God had an encounter with Abraham, Abraham with him, was Shechem. And the conclusion that Abraham was, you're God, I'm not. That was that moment. We all go through that Shechem moment. But then the next mountain is Bethel. And it's here that Abraham realizes, God is my father. And he has this revelation, okay. Then you move along, and then you read, it moves to a third mountain, Hebron. And it's here that God knew he could trust him now as an intimate friend. And so when you begin to see this, you begin to say, as David found out, God shares personal things with intimate friends. And this is where God says to Abraham, Abraham, I'm about to do something, but I want you to be a part of it. Sodom and Gomorrah, I'm letting you know. And of course, we know that story. So where are you with the Lord? Which mountain are you on? Maybe you need to start again with the Lord. Maybe lay down some of the dreams that have gotten in the way of the dream maker. Maybe for some of you, it's like just to start, like for the first time ever, right? To say, I want you to be my God. I want to be intimate with you. I want to have a relationship with you, God. But this requires you to reach out, to lay down, to offer your heart, say, I want all in, Jesus, I want all in. But there's a payment that has to be started in a relationship with him. Here's the good news. Christ came to pay that for you, right? Lay down his life. Again, the wages of sin is death, but Christ came to pay that wage that we could not pay for ourselves. So we're born spiritually dead, but we need a spiritual awakening. And when you receive Christ, you are woken up. The right woken, by the way. If we confess with our mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in our heart God raised him from the dead, then you'll be saved. I was driving down, in conclusion, I was just thinking about you and this message, I'm scratching the conclusion to say that I just want to pray with you. Think of a dream right now that may have gotten in the way with you and the Lord. Or think of a dream you have in the Lord that you want to have with him. And put your mind on that. I want to be close to God where he goes to me. Now you're my friend and I'll tell you what I want to do. And so whatever that is, let me pray for you, okay?